Hello, hello, hello. Good afternoon, good evening, good morning. You are tuned in listening to the Cinematic Odyssey here on U92 The Moose. It's good to be back on the show, Max. Last week, we did a great job talking about Zone of Interest. That was a good time talking about that. But coming up very soon, in a few short days, film's biggest awards event, the Academy Awards, the 96th Academy Awards, or as everybody calls them, the Oscars. You know, not the most important, but I do put a lot of undue weight on these award ceremonies, even though they disappoint me year after year. The only year since I've started watching them that I wasn't disappointed was when Parasite won Best Picture, but you know, that was in the past. So hopefully this year I don't get disappointed again. Cause last year, I mean, anybody who remembers my reaction, to last year's, wins. Well,
I had so much fun listening to you talk about Michelle Yeoh and Cate Blanchett. I had so much fun listening to that.
Yeah, so, you know, I was very, very sad and mad. But it is what it is. Now we're on 2024, 2023. This year is great. 2023 was a great year for film. So the voters have a very easy task, I think, to not mess up, but we'll see. I know they will. It's like EA, you know. It may look promising, but when it releases, it's always a disappointment in some way or another.
It's in the game.
Let's get started though. Let's get started with I don't know. Let's see. Let's start with like the costume, makeup, hairstyling.
Yeah, why not? Let's go there. Yeah,
let's go there. All right, we'll do makeup and hairstyling. So we got Golda, Maestro, Oppenheimer, Poor Things, and Society of the Snow.
Ooh.
You can start.
Now, I've seen four of these. I did not see Golda. It is nominated only in this category, Golda is. I don't know. See, I really want to lean towards Poor Things for this, but Society of the Snow did have some impressive looks. I think pick prediction, same thing. Who I want to win and who I think will. I think we'll keep it with Poor Things for this one. Nice and simple.
Okay. I have only seen three of the films, so Maestro, Oppenheimer, Poor Things. My prediction is probably Maestro. That's my prediction.
Ooh.
My pick, though, probably Poor Things.
Yeah. I mean, Willem Dafoe's face completely transformed for that.
Oh, I know. It looks incredible. But yeah. We'll go to the next one. Best costume. So we got Barbie, Killers of the Flower Moon, Napoleon, Oppenheimer, and Poor Things.
I think this one is kind of easy as well.
Yeah.
At least for me. Pick prediction, Barbie. I mean, I think it's difficult to go in a different direction with this. Maybe Poor Things rivals it, but I think Barbie deserves and will get the nod from the Academy.
I'm gonna go prediction Killers of the Flower Moon.
Really?
Yeah, I think because of the Native American costuming, I think the voters will go for that, and it looked incredible too. But my pick though, probably Poor Things. My pick is Poor Things. But prediction, I think maybe a little bit of a left field pick. Yeah, Killers of the Flower.
Yeah. You've surprised me with two of these so far. We've only done two of them, so
that's what I'm thinking. All right, what next?
Production design?
Yeah, sure, we'll go with that.
So for that, we've got Barbie, Killers of the Flower Moon, Napoleon, Oppenheimer, and Poor Things. And this is the scenery backdrop creation of the what you see behind the actor. And I think, again, just based on the imaginative nature of it, I think this one, again, comes down to Poor Things and Barbie.
Yeah.
Those are the two most reasonable choices. And I think, again, the Academy will go with Barbie over Poor Things, which actually I would pick Poor Things here, but I think the Academy will go with Barbie.
I'm thinking the same thing. Yeah, I would pick Poor Things because I think like the world that was built and in play the costumes as well and the makeup and hairstyle. Like all these three categories that we're talking about, they play a huge factor into immersing us into the very like absurdist and whimsical world that Yorgos and the crew dreamt up. It's such a striking visual like feast for the eyes. And I mean, when we get to cinematography, I'll talk about that more, but I think the production design plays a pretty significant role in terms of telling the story of Bella Baxter and her growth as a human being and exploring the world. So yeah, I would pick Poor Things. My prediction, I'm predicting Barbie, yeah.
I mean, if either of those two win, I'm not upset with that, because again, it's such a different world that is being created that's really, really skillful from both teams of designers. But, I mean, I think Poor Things, there's just that extra, I think there's more there. Yeah. But I'm not upset with either of those winning.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't either. Either of those would be fine. Yeah, most definitely.
Yeah.
All right.
You want to move to editing?
Let's do VFX.
Love it.
Yeah, VFX. Best VFX. We got the creator. All right. Yeah, I'll listen. On. So we got the creator, Godzilla Minus One, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3, Mission Impossible, Dead Reckoning Part 1, and Napoleon.
I've seen 3.
I have seen 1.
Oh, wow.
I've only seen one of those.
Which one was that?
Godzilla.
That makes sense.
Great film.
My pick would be Godzilla, actually. Two.
Yeah, of those, yeah.
Yeah, I didn't see Guardians and I didn't see Mission Impossible. But I think pick prediction, Godzilla Minus One. It just looks...
Yeah, I'm saying the same thing.
It looks so good. Like, I mean, the atomic breath? Please.
I'm going to say snub, though. Snub for Spider-Man Across Spider-Verse for its achievement in 3D and 2D animation and its blending of those styles and incorporating different animation techniques in the film and creating such a beautiful world in that movie. So I will say snub for Spider-Man Across Spider-Verse. I am shocked that it wasn't nominated, but you know, it is what it is.
I mean, I think I got an easy reason why it wasn't.
Because it was an animated film.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, come on. Come on.
But still, I mean, I think what they achieved in that film was incredible. I don't know.
Fair.
It's my opinion. Anyways, moving on.
Moving on.
Let's see. Best sound. Best sound. Sound design. This one's very easy for me. But let me list off the films nominated. The Creator, Maestro, Mission Impossible, Dead Reckoning Part 1, Oppenheimer, and The Zone of Interest. My pick and prediction is going for The Zone of Interest.
That's very fair. And I think that's the right move. My pick is also Zone of Interest. Whether or not the Academy goes with it depends on how much of the Academy has actually seen the Zone of Interest and how many of them gave it a chance, how many of them actually, you know, took that in. And given the kind of, I don't know, historical failing to do so, I think that the Academy will go with Oppenheimer here in sound. But my pick, so? My hope, my prayer is for the Zone of Interest to take it.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, you might be right.
I mean, it's a gamble, because if enough people saw it, it would probably shoot up the best picture rankings.
That's true.
But there's also the possibility that, you know, it gets completely shut out of adapted screenplay, shut out for director.
Yeah, I mean, it is between those two films. Maestro, Oppenheimer and Zone of Interest. But I'm hoping that Zone of Interest wins.
Yes.
I'm not in the riot territory there, but I mean, I would be a little peeved by that if Oppenheimer does win, but I won't be like upset. We'll get to that later.
We were talking about after the previous episode, we were talking about how much beef Tristan would have if Oppenheimer won each of the awards it's nominated for. We got some hot takes coming.
Yeah, we do. I do.
But let's move to a reasonable one. What about score? Best original score.
Best original score. All right, so we got American Fiction from Laura Karpman, Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny, John Williams, Killers of the Flower Moon, Robbie Robertson, Oppenheimer, Ludwig Göransson, and Poor Things from Jerskin Fendrix. You can leave us off.
All right. Well, a note on some of this. Robbie Robertson passed away this past year.
Oh, he did.
After his work on the film. And so that award, if awarded to him, would be posthumously. But that's a big loss because his work on Killers was pretty good. But yes,
very good.
My pick, my prediction, again, melding into one. Because I think I've figured out the Academy. I've gotten them to a science. I think it's going to be Ludwig Göransson for Oppenheimer. Pick and prediction. I think he would deserve it, and I think that it makes sense for the Academy to go that way.
Fair enough. I mean, my pick of the five that are nominated is Poor Things. I think the plucky, like, playful sounds that Fendrix comes up with. And again, it's just the world building. I love it. Not to say that Göransson's score was beautiful, which it was. I didn't like the use of it, although that's not his fault. That's more on Nolan, but we'll get to that. But as far as the music, though, in the film, it was very beautiful. It was a very beautiful score. So, I mean, if either of them win, I'm fine with that. Killers 2, I'm okay with that. I don't know why John Williams is nominated. Again, he's been nominated like a million times. He's won 15,000 Oscars. He doesn't need to be there. And in fact, who should be there in his place is Micah Levy for their work on The Zone of Interest. That score, my favorite of the year, played such a pivotal role in crafting a sinister atmosphere throughout the film. I mean, it wasn't present that much, but when it was there, you could really feel the kind of the it had this very distinct evil quality to it, but it wasn't like a comically evil. It's just the synths and the synths that they played with in the score was beautiful. So Micah Levy, if you know, they should have been nominated, and yeah, they got snubbed like crazy. But my picks, Poor Things and Prediction, yeah, Oppenheimer.
Yeehaw. Giddy up on that. Do you want to go editing, cinematography, or song?
Let's do song.
All right, word.
Go song.
Now, I did listen to all the songs. I didn't see all the movies associated with all the songs, but I listened to all the songs. Don't know how I feel about that. But I think this is probably one of the easiest choices for me of the night. Pick Prediction, because I do think the Academy will get it right.
Okay.
Pick Prediction, What Was I Made For? From Barbie. Billie Eilish comes home with her second Oscar in 3 years, and it's a well-deserved one. It's very well-deserved. It's a beautiful song.
Yeah. My pick is, I'm going to butcher this pronunciation, so bear with me. Wazhaze? A Song for My People from Killers of the Flower Moon. That's my pick. If I recall, that is the song at the end of the film. I believe. I'm not entirely sure. But I know there was also a Native American song that was played at the beginning of the film. So it may have been that as well. I'm not sure, though. But both were beautiful, and I loved both of them and their inclusions in the film. So that's my pick. Prediction. What Was I Made For? Barbie.
Yeah. Woo!
All right.
Yippee!
Next up, let's go with the shorts.
Oh, cool! I'll just speed run this then.
Yeah, I didn't see any of these.
I did my homework for this.
Yeah, you did. You did.
As of recording, I've seen 39 of all of the films that are nominated for anything. For reference, that is just under 75%. I got through pretty much everything that's streaming. Not everything, but most. Some is not available to watch, and that is tragic, and I am very, very sad about that. Like, we'll talk about some of the ones I'm disappointed in missing, but I'm gonna speed run through here some of these. We're gonna start with live action short. Live action short, because I thought that this was like the most underwhelming category in nomination, in contention. This was I've seen every film, every picture nominated for that category. And four of the five of them are kind of, I thought, mediocre. I didn't think they were great. And it shocks me a little bit. In reverse order of my preference, we had The After, which is actually, in my opinion, the worst thing nominated for an Oscar that I've seen this year. out of 39, which is basically just 15 minutes of David Oyelowo mourning. There is nothing, no commentary, nothing is provided to us, and it's weird, and it doesn't work. Like, what? Why? I don't understand it. Four, I have, and it hurts me, The Wonderful Story of Henry Sugar, Wes Anderson. It's a symmetrical audiobook at 1.5 times speed. I didn't get much out of it because it just felt like they were reading the book to me. If I wanted to read the book, I could go to the library and get the book. Number three, Invincible. Now, this was a French-Canadian short film about the last 48 hours of the life of the director's young friend, Marc-Antoine Bernier. And he was in, like, this youth detention center, escaped, and then drove a car into a river that he stole. I didn't find anything really. There were some gorgeous shots under the water. But all in all, it did nothing, next to nothing for me. We have in number two, which was actually the most kind of mediocre one of the ones that I saw, Knight of Fortune, which I want to say it was Scandinavian, and it's about an older gentleman who loses his wife, but can't stomach grieving her alone. So he meets this other dude who's grieving someone else that he's lost, and we find out that he lost his wife years prior, and he just goes around grieving because he was never able to grieve the body of his actual wife. And it's very tragic, but it's really, really nice to watch these kind of just old men bond over shared grief. Beautiful. But my pick is Red, White, and Blue, starring Brittany Snow. That is, the symbolism is heavy-handed. It's not, I don't think it blows everything away. The use of color is pretty good. You do see the red, white, and the blue as we go through the film. But I think that there is a moment in just witnessing this, because it's about a young mother who has to go across state lines to receive an abortion. And there's a point in that process where my heart dropped from my chest to fully out of my body. It was the worst experience, and it just... I recommend that you watch it if you can. It's available to rent online for $2. It's going to be a harrowing 20 minutes, but I think it'll be a good 20 minutes that you spend. So pick is going to be Red, White, and Blue. Our prediction is The Wonderful Story of Henry Sugar. Wes Anderson will get an Oscar for arguably one of his worst projects. Tragic.
It's crazy that there was not a single nomination for Asteroid City. Not one.
Oh, we're getting to that.
That's insane to me. But yeah, we'll get to that.
Yeah, well, we're getting to that.
Yeah, I know you definitely have things to say about that. best short animated?
I've seen three of these. Our Uniform is not available to stream anywhere. It is Iranian. It is 6 minutes. Why is it not available to stream anywhere? It is 6 minutes long. And then the other one I didn't see was War Is Over, based on the song from John Lennon, produced by, I think, his son. But I did not see that one either. Hooray. What I did see, and in third for me, is Pachyderm. Pachyderm follows the story of a young girl who spends a few days with her grandparents, and then overcomes or has to deal with sexual assault from her grandmother or grandfather. And it's a really, really nice, good story. The animation style wasn't doing it for me. That's just me. Second for me, 95 Senses. The only person who speaks throughout, it's kind of a monologue. It's Tim Blake Nelson, who I really enjoy. That one's actually, this is streaming free online now. So if you can watch it, I say you do. Because there's a moment where it takes a strong left turn that you are not expecting, and it absolutely works. But it takes a journey through the five senses that we experience as humans, and each sense has a different animation style that I think really works super, super well. I've enjoyed that, and getting to revisit it as well. And then my number one there is Letter to a Pig. It's addressing generational trauma. So basically what I've deemed to be a Holocaust survivor is speaking to a classroom about the experience that he had hiding from Nazi officers who were chasing him down, hides in a pigsty and lives with pigs for months. And kids, being kids, make fun of him and tease him for living with the pig. They're oinking, they're snorting, doing all sorts of dumb stuff. And instead of turning from a letter of gratitude to the pig, it then turns into fury and anger and a lack of forgiveness and a lust for vengeance against the people who made him live with the pig. And it discusses generational trauma, whether or not we pass that down, and if it's possible to avoid that. The animation there is really cool, blending motion capture and you can see real hands, real faces, real features in with kind of this rough outline of people. It's a really cool style. Pick and prediction, Letter to a Pig.
Okay. Best documentary short?
I've seen all of these too. Four of them are on YouTube, I think. Well, no, three of them are on YouTube. One's on Hulu and Disney Plus, and the other is on Paramount Plus that I signed up for today.
Oh, okay.
Free trial. Yeehaw. In Dead Last for me is The Barber of Little Rock. It's about economic inequality in a suburb of Arkansas where a gentleman started a barber college and is working to create a financial institution so that people in this low-income community can get loans, pay them back, and, you know, be trusted rather than be written off by a large bank. I don't think it says anything. I don't think it brings up much, and I didn't think it had anything. I think there were ways that they could have made that better. It didn't work for me. Four, I had Island in Between. I did really like this. Because it's this island in between Taiwan and China that's kind of in dispute. And the people who are there, like, they can't get picked up. There was, like, no ferry from China for a while. They were just stuck in between these two nations at war. There's a lot of metaphor. It's the shortest one nominated in this category. But it's not bad. Three, I had Nai Nai and Waipo. I hope I pronounced them correctly. But it's these sweet old grandmas. It's so cool. It's so fun. I enjoyed that. I liked that. Because it's, you know, grandmothers living together, enjoying their life. But life is different when their grandson, who was the documentarian, is not around. And it's really kind of beautiful, really kind of sad. Made me want to call my grandma. Number two and my prediction for the Academy is the ABCs of book banning. It basically takes us through Florida's quest to ban and question books, most of them involving LGBTQ characters, black characters, civil rights, fact fiction, whatever genre. it's generally censored if it's anywhere close to being what you could consider a liberal talking point, I say in quotes. So, but the people contributing, it yeah, starts this, at the video.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's, oh, God.
It starts and ends with a 100-year-old woman objecting to the Florida one school board about banning books and says that her husband died in World War II fighting the Nazis, who did the exact same thing. Burning books, banning books, same thing.
Yeah, yeah.
But the people who make up the entire and the entirety of the middle of the 27-minute documentary are kids. Ages 7 to 16. Kids who were provided with age-appropriate reading materials on the banned books list and found nothing objectionable within it, and provided, you know, decently well thought out the reasons for why these books should not be banned. And, you know, books that, you know, it's absolutely crazy that are banned, like Rosa Parks' biographies. Like, seriously? Really?
Well, why? I mean, it's not a secret as to why those books are banned.
That's true. But it's just...
twisted.
Yeah. But it makes me shake my head the more I hear what books are banned. It's ridiculous.
Oh, I mean, I'm not surprised considering it's DeSantis. I mean, I'm not shocked.
Yeah. But my pick is on YouTube, The Last Repair Shop. It's LA City Public Schools have a free instrument repair program for their students. And there are these craftsmen who work at this shop who make sure that the 80,000 school kids have an instrument ready to play. And it goes through, weaves their life and their experience with music in with, you know, kids who've received instruments through this program and gotten them improved through this program. And the score for the entire picture is performed by graduates of LA City Public Schools together in one room, whether they're, you know, 10 years old or 60. And I loved it. It was beautiful about why you need to keep music programs funded and why, you know, it's really important to have each city kind of having a vibrant music education, arts education program. So my pick is The Last Repair Shop. My prediction, the ABCs of book banning.
Right. let's do documentary feature.
Word. I've seen 3 of these, and I do plan to see more. The 2 I haven't, Eternal Memory, is following the life of a Chilean journalist and a Chilean actress. The husband has been diagnosed with Alzheimer's, and it's discussing how that's progressed in their relationship, how their relationship has changed, and also how he addresses the atrocities of a previous dictatorship in Chile. The other one I haven't seen is To Kill a Tiger. It just dropped on Netflix today, Friday, when we're recording this. So I'm watching it tomorrow. But it's about Indian parents, Indian from India. Indian parents who are seeking a form of justice for their daughter who suffered, their young daughter who suffered gang rape. And they're looking for their own form of justice. And it's called To Kill a Tiger. The 3 I did see, and, well, the worst one that I did see was Bobby Wine, the People's President. It felt like a long news report. I was being informed of Bobby Wine, pop star turned Ugandan representative in government and outside presidential challenger. I didn't think that there was anything in there that was there wasn't much doing something for me. We had in second for me was Four Daughters, which takes place in Tunisia. It's very experimental, with the documentarian having her voice featured a lot, and actors as well as the actual family featured, subbing in and out for certain scenes. There are scenes where an actor plays the mother. There are scenes where the mother plays the mother, and the mother watches and, you know, determines whether or not the scene is actually playing out correctly. But what happened is the mother and her four daughters, the eldest two, we're going to say co-opted and convinced to join ISIS and are currently serving a 16-year prison sentence in Libya. And it talks a lot about what your parents give to you and how much of that was mom's fault, how much of that was them wanting to be their own person and making their own choices. But it was cool. I thought it was a little, I don't know. It was a little experimental for a documentary. It was strange. I do recommend a watch, though. It's on Canopy. But then the one that I've seen is harrowing. I don't care how much of it you get through. Everyone should see it. 20 Days in Mariupol. That is journalists in Ukraine, the Ukrainian city of Mariupol, as Russian forces are closing in and trying to cut off the city. It's disturbing. It's horrifying. You're seeing civilian deaths. You're seeing young civilian deaths. Babies, toddlers, adults, teenagers. Horrible, horrible images. But it's juxtaposed with Russian officials declining that anything happening in Ukraine is real, that these are actors, that this is false, this is fake, and no one should believe it. My pick, I think it has to be 20 Days in Mariupol, because I've seen it. I think a prediction will be to go with, and kind of bold outsider, to go with To Kill a Tiger.
Right.
Welcome back to the conversation, Tristan.
I know. That was four categories. I had nothing to say because I didn't watch a single thing. I will say, though, for documentary feature, my boys, John Boyce and Alex Rubenstein, got snubbed for the history of the Minnesota Vikings.
Ooh.
All right. So, you know, I don't know when the Academy voters will ever notice the genius of John Boyce. I don't think that will ever happen, but maybe one day.
I think because it's a mini series that there's so many episodes.
Oh, that's true. I don't think
it can count.
That's a good point. And it's not shown in theaters. So
what if they just do the supercut?
Well, it has to be screened in theaters for a week.
Lame.
So that too. So never mind. Well, let's just say it did fit the criteria. It was snubbed. All right. Let's do animated feature. Best animated feature. All right, now I can actually say something about this. Not much, but something.
Take it away. Give me a break. Yeah,
Dwayne the Heron from Hayao Miyazaki. His final film came out of retirement for this one, and he is officially retired after this. He, at the ripe old age of 93. I think. I don't know. He's old. One of the greatest filmmakers of all time. Like, not even a question. Elemental, the Disney Pixar film, I didn't even watch, but the people that did watch it said it was trash. I believe them. Nimona, that's a Netflix film, right? Yeah, I don't know.
It's not bad.
Yeah, I've heard like positive things about that. Robot Dreams, the film that nobody could watch because it was like nearly impossible to get access to watch. The film that doesn't exist. That.
I'm so, I'm infuriated. It's ridiculous.
The film that doesn't exist. And then Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse. I only saw that one and The Boy and the Heron. So, yeah, my pick is The Boy and the Heron. My prediction is The Boy and the Heron.
Damn. Nice.
Because it's Miyazaki's, well, it's his last film. So I'm assuming that the voters will pick him just as like a, hey, we appreciate your work, even though I don't think he's won any awards before, like at all, like any Oscars.
He might have for Spirited Away.
Maybe. He might be right. But yeah, I mean, he deserves the gas. I mean, he is literally like the most important animated filmmaker of all time. And he's like probably the greatest. So actually not probably, he is the greatest. And Studio Ghibli is the greatest animation house on planet Earth. So yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, he's 83 for reference.
Oh, 83. Okay, I thought he was 90.
He looks really good for 83. For
miles. Oh, yeah. Day. Yeah, he does.
I saw two in this category, and it wasn't Spider-Verse. I saw Nimona and I saw Boy and the Heron. Robot Dreams infuriates me. You couldn't watch this movie unless you were at the limited screening in France, the limited screening in Spain, or time traveled forward to May when it releases in the United States, and then come back to make your prediction. It's ridiculous.
There's a couple of international features where that's the case. Well, you know, that pisses me off because there's films in there that they're actually showing right now. So I guess technically we kind of did have the chance to watch them. But
yeah, I had the opportunity to travel an hour and a half to watch a movie. The length of the movie. But anyways, Nimona is kind of like my Mitchells versus the Machines pick in that it's a really solid movie, but I it will not win. My pick and prediction is The Boy and the Heron. Yeah, I mean, it's beautiful. It's gorgeous.
Oh, I know.
I loved it.
Incredible. Yeah, absolutely deserving. And I did look. He did win an award for Spirited Away. You were right.
Woo!
Best animated feature in 2002.
Year after Shrek.
Yeah.
That's a little fun bit of Academy trivia. Did you know Shrek screened for the Palme d'Or?
Oh, really?
It did, yeah. It was in the Palme d'Or? It was in contention for the Palme d'Or at Cannes.
No way, bro. Dude, DreamWorks really thought they were cooking, bro. They thought, hey guys, let's see if we could win Palme d'Or. Oh man, I respect it though. I respect the submission.
And Steven Spielberg was attached to that early. I did a lot of research on that earlier. But moving on.
All right. Okay, so we did.
We've got international feature, cinematography, editing.
We'll do feature international.
International feature word.
So we got IO
EO
Capitano. Yeah. Capitano.
Mamma mia.
Capitano. From Italy. Perfect Days from Japan. That's a Wim Wenders film that is currently in theaters that I really want to watch. Although I think it comes to streaming soon, so I'll probably just watch it online. But yeah, that's a film that from the moment I heard about it, I was like, okay, I gotta see this. And Wim Wenders is a German filmmaker, legendary German filmmaker. He's a very humanistic filmmaker. I've only seen one of his movies, Paris, Texas, which is incredible. Definitely go watch that. Yeah, Perfect Days. I need to see that. Society of the Snow from Spain. I haven't seen that. That's on Netflix. Although I know people have said nothing but good things about it. The Teacher's Lounge. Oh, you disagree. Wait, did you like it? You watched it, right?
Society of the Snow. Yeah, I liked it.
Yeah. The Teacher's Lounge from Germany, which I think should have been a fire. I didn't see that, but I've heard more about that film and better things about that film, at least within my film circles, the people I follow. So, I mean, there is some bias there, but I think A Fire from Christian, what's his name? Christian Petzold. Yeah. That got a lot of great praise from some critics that I follow and whatnot. And then last but not certainly not least, The Zone of Interest from the UK. But it is all in German, so, and some in Polish. Some in Polish and Hebrew.
Ooh.
Or Yiddish.
Yeah. Well, yeah. International is just released.
Yes, produced. I know. I'm just saying the language.
I mean,
but yeah, the production where, yeah. My pick is The Zone of Interest and probably Prediction because it's in the Best Picture nominee. So,
I mean, yeah, that's fair.
Yeah.
Which it
definitely deserves.
Yeah. I mean, I think I'm a year late on this, but Lemoncita, honorable mention. Again, anytime I get the chance to talk about that movie, I will.
Mm-hmm.
I believe it's a joint production between Spain and Italy. Fantastic, and I love it. With this is the most boring category to pick because it's going to be The Zone of Interest.
Yeah.
Going to be The Zone of Interest. Pick and Prediction, Zone of Interest. I want to give the other ones shots to see them, but again, Io Capitano, Taste of Things, Perfect Days, which I believe Perfect Days will skyrocket up my ranks of foreign language films after I see it.
Yes, yeah,
me too. I have a feeling, but I didn't see it for this. I did see Society of the Snow. It is the best Spanish language film that I have seen to date because the other ones have kind of been mid. There's beautiful moments of just epic, adrenaline-filling noise, and then hard cuts to just silence. And you realize how much you've been holding your breath and how much your pulse is racing. It's really, really well done. But, no, Zone of Interest, all the way.
I want to give some shout-outs to other foreign films that, unfortunately, I didn't get to see. But I are on my watch list, and these films have gotten a good amount of praise. Rotting in the Sun from Sebastian Silva. This is on Mubi, so if you have Mubi, you can watch it there or rent it on Apple TV. So that's one of them. Monster from Hirokazu Koreeda. He's a fairly well-known contemporary Japanese filmmaker. He's made quite a lot over the course of his career, but his most, I guess, renowned work is Shoplifters, which won the Palme d'Or in 2018, which I've seen, which is really good. So, Monster, I really want to see that. I don't know if that's in theaters now, but I'm not sure. Maybe not. The Taste of Things. This is another film I really want to see from Tron On Hung. I'm not sure if I'm saying that name correctly, but I really want to see this. This looks really good. Both because it's about cooks and food, and I love food. So, yeah, I really want to see this. But more than that, it's been getting good reception as well. And then I mentioned A Fire, Fallen Leaves from Aki Kaurismäki.
Finland, right? This is
What? Finland? Yeah, he's Finnish, I believe. Yeah, he's Finnish. He's been around since, I think, the 80s. But he's a filmmaker that I've been wanting to, like, get into. He's also well-respected. This film was praised during, you know, the festival run that it had. This film, while yes, released technically in 2022, like premiere-wise, in the U.S., it released last year in 2023, but this is Godland from Ljunar Bolmason. I definitely said that wrong. Icelandic filmmaker. I've heard nothing but great things about this, so I really want to see that. So just shout out to those films that didn't get much love, or didn't get any love from the Academy Awards.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Cinematography, writing, editing.
Let's do editing.
Word. Who was nominated in that, Tristan?
So we got Anatomy of a Fall, Laurent Signechal. I definitely said that wrong. The Holdovers, Kevin Tent, Killers of the Flower Moon from the legendary Thelma Schoonmaker, Oppenheimer, Jennifer Lame, Poor Things, Yorgos
Sarides?
Sarides? I don't know.
Yorgos Parthou. I don't know.
What?
You tried. That was
Yorgos Parthou. I tried. Oh, yeah.
What you all thinking?
Right. I'm thinking, okay, my pick is Anatomy of a Fall. That's my pick. You really act surprised?
No, I'm just very happy.
Oh, okay, yeah, no, I mean, it's not even a question. Although Thelma Schoonmaker, I mean, she's like probably the greatest editor of all time. I wouldn't be mad if she wins it, but also too, like, I think the editing in Anatomy of a Fall was just more hard-hitting, and I think it was, in conjunction with the directing, was brilliant. And the film had such a, like, incredible flow, especially in the courtroom scenes, you know? And then cutting back in that one specific scene when they were talking about, they were playing the recording of the conversation between the wife and the husband.
Yep.
That interplay, that was brilliant. So I will say Anatomy of a Fall is my pick. My prediction, probably Killers of the Flower Moon, Thelma Schoonmaker, because it's Thelma Schoonmaker. That's my prediction.
I'm just going to be a shill and manifest it and hope it works. Pick and prediction Anatomy of a Fall. I really want it, and therefore it'll happen, right?
Yes, I agree wholeheartedly.
Yeah!
Yes, manifest. Yeah, I mean, no, it deserves to win this award, definitely. Oppenheimer felt like a trailer, so I didn't really like that much. Although, that's due to a multitude of reasons. That's not just all on the editor, but yeah. I'll talk about that later.
Yeah.
It's best cinematography.
Here, give me a chance at the names. These are a little bit easier, so maybe I should give you redemption.
What?
On the names.
On what? Oh, for the cinematography award?
Yeah.
Oh, you can go. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. Well, then we have El Conde from Edward Lachman, Killers of the Flower Moon, Rodrigo Prieto, Maestro, Matthew Libatique, Oppenheimer, Hoyt Van Hoytema, and Poor Things, Robbie Ryan. I've seen all of these. I watched El Conde.
Yeah.
I don't know why, but I did.
Pablo Lorraine.
It was weird. It was weird as hell.
I mean, you can start.
Oh,
predictions.
I really, you know, I'm going to be completely honest with you here. I'm going to pick Poor Things just because I'm remembering all the fisheye shots. I'm going to pick Poor Things, but my prediction is Oppenheimer will take this. Hoyt Van Hoytema will win for Oppenheimer.
Okay. I think I have thoughts. Killers of the Flower Moon was stunning. Very beautiful film. I think captured the I can't believe I'm forgetting the name of the town that it takes place in, but that's just for the sake of the show. The Osage town. The town of the Osage, very well. Maestro, and I'll have more thoughts later, but it was a very gorgeous looking film, but that was kind of it. And then Oppenheimer looked cool, but I think it was... There was shots, the film, the look of the film kind of reminded me of The Master from Paul Thomas Anderson, which is a beautiful looking film. So, I mean, that has it going for. But I will say Poor Things is my favorite of the bunch. Not just because of the different lenses that were used, but I do think, the framing and the blocking and the capturing of all the production elements on the sets, you know, was brilliant. I thought it was a beautiful looking movie. Beautiful.
Yeah.
So pick Poor Things. My prediction is Maestro.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Is there a reason for that?
I think given it's a very Oscar Beatty film, and it's in black and white. I know Oppenheimer has black and white shots too, and sort of Poor Things. But I think Maestro, I think Bradley Cooper, I know he campaigned like really hard for this, for his film to win awards. I mean, again, Maestro is a very nice looking movie. I'm not gonna lie. It looks gorgeous. It does. And the lighting was great too, like in the black and white shots, but yeah, I think because of that, I think the voters will go for Maestro.
Dang. All right. Fair enough.
So,
shall we move on to director?
Oh, and also too, it was shot in a 4:8 aspect ratio, you know? Just another little, hey, look at us. Ding ding ding. Look at this carrot on a stick. Look, we're an artsy movie. So, yeah. I'm thinking Maestro's gonna probably win that award. Or is it 4:8 or 4:3? 4:3. Not a 4:8. My bad. 4:3 aspect ratio. Anyways, moving on.
Do you want to do director, screenplay?
Let's go to the screenplays.
Ooh, I got things to say here.
Okay.
You want to go adapted?
Sure. We'll go adapted.
Adapted screenplay. Bum, bum, bum. But adapted from whom? Best adapted screenplay. American Fiction. Barbie. Oppenheimer. Poor Things. The Zone of Interest. Now, for reference, this is actually what's written in the script and how the script looks. This has nothing to do with kind of how it was presented. It's the writing aspect of it all.
Correct.
All right. My pick is Poor Things.
Interesting. Care to elaborate? No, I do not.
No, I mean, look, I think, I know you didn't like the movie, okay?
I didn't.
I know you didn't like it. I know you didn't like it, and now you're a freaking Poor Things hater, which is mind-boggling, by the way, because it's an incredible film. I don't know what you watched.
I watched Poor Things in theaters.
You clearly watched a different movie, because
sadly.
Poor Things was great. I thought the take on Frankenstein and like modernizing it in a way that we have Bella Baxter, who is implanted. She, you know, her character commits suicide, and then Willem Dafoe's character implants her baby's, who was in her womb, her baby's brain into her brain, then reviving her. And so she's a little baby in a woman's body. And throughout the course of the film, we see her explore many different things, very different aspects of life. As she like tries to shed off expectations of femininity from these separate male influences or people in her life, one being Willem Dafoe, who's like her dad, her god dad, as she refers to him as in the film. You know, we have Mark Ruffalo's character, who's hilarious, and he like is kind of this sexual figure as he pushes the boundaries of like exploring her sexual her life, her sexual life, and her kind of growing out of that and exploring that on her own through the film. And then the other guy, played by, oh my gosh,
you mean Max, played by Rami
Yusuf Amir. Yusuf Amir.
Rami?
Is that his name?
Yeah.
Yeah, right? Or Rami, Rami Yusuf.
Yeah.
Rami Yusuf. Being this kind of like gentle, meager, like kind of guy who loves her and isn't necessarily like, he's kind of like a figure in limbo. But I thought the film was brilliant, one of the best of the year. Okay. Not this. It wasn't good. Okay, Yorgos Lanthimos is an incredible filmmaker and great writer. He was this. The Poor Things is great. I think what he set out to accomplish, was achieved. Yeah, 5 out of 5, easy. So that's my pick. And my prediction, I'm going to say Barbie. That's my
cool
prediction.
Story, bro. Cool story.
You told me to elaborate. You told me to
I did. I just really wanted to dunk on Poor Things.
You
I really wanted
so
to dunk
mean,
on Poor Things.
You are so mean.
Yeah, I did. Yeah. Sure. Be that way, I guess.
Oh my god.
I think this is, I mean, I have my problems with Poor Things. Poor Things was my lowest rated and my lowest opinioned opined piece, nominated for Best Picture. Would I prefer it over some others? Yes, but I did not get the same thing out of that film. Stop wagging your finger. I did not get the same out of that. I think that this award here, Adapted Screenplay, I think that it belongs to Christopher Nolan and Oppenheimer. I think the Academy will send it that way, and I will pick that as well. I think it is deserving. Not only is it double the length of the average screenplay, it's also shifting between color sequences and shifting between personal pronoun uses as well. Objective third person and first person to also indicate the changes in what is objective fact and what is subjected to the man, J. Robert Oppenheimer. I think that's going to scoop him the award. I don't think it should be close.
Okay.
That didn't hurt me. I have no attachment to this. I don't care if Oppenheimer loses.
All right. Is that your pick and prediction, right?
Pick and prediction, Oppenheimer. All right.
Best original screenplay? Okay, I know what you're picking.
I got some snubs here, man. I got some snubs here, too.
All right, let me list them off. So we got Anatomy of a Fall, The Holdovers, Maestro, May December, and Past Lives.
Great films.
Oh, yeah. Except for one.
Hang on. Gotta look at my notes. Where the heck? Except for Maestro? Is that what you're talking about? Okay.
Yes.
That makes sense. Yeah, that fits. I would like to shout out missing pieces here. The Boy and the Heron, I think, could be nominated here. Ooh, I think I think Missing Out was Dream Scenario. Christopher Borgman.
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
I thought that missed out. I think that is a really imaginative, really good look at fame and being viral on the internet. What that means nowadays is great. I loved it. Made my top 15 last year. I think the Iron Claw would work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I was very, very proud and pleased with how that turned out. That was a great screenplay, yes. Great story.
Oh, yeah.
I've gassed this film up a lot too. Sanctuary, and it's not going to be the last time I'm talking about it.
Mm-hmm.
But that two people in an apartment in a hotel room for 90 minutes. It's fantastic. It's really, really great how they use color, light, beautiful, and also Asteroid City. Because come on, it's perfect. It's great. I loved it. Asteroid City, I think, got massively snubbed in this category, it did. Specifically.
It did.
In general,
I think it got snubbed.
But. Yeah. Of the films that were actually nominated, which are good ones, I really like a lot of these. But quite honestly, I'm going to be predictable. I'm going to be lame. I'm going to pick Anatomy of a Fall because, duh. I think my prediction is going to go to The Holdovers. I sounded depressed when I said that. I love The Holdovers. I sounded depressed, but I think The Holdovers is going to get some love from the Academy, and it'll win here.
Alexander Payne, yeah. Yeah. This one's hard for me. Yeah. Because there are two films, well, I guess three, but more so two. I mean, I loved four of them. Like, the only one I didn't like was Maestro. But the rest I loved. But as far as the two that are hard, it's Anatomy of a Fall and May December. I think, well, for one, May December got snubbed like crazy.
Yes.
Where's my best director nom? Where's my best actress nom? Where's my best supporting actress nom? Where's my best supporting actor nom? Where's my best picture nom? Okay, Academy? What are you guys doing? Why are you sleeping on my boy Todd, huh? May December, if you haven't seen it, please go watch it, everybody. It's on Netflix. I think everyone has Netflix. So please go watch it. It's incredible. One of the best films of the year. And then Anatomy of a Fall, Palme d'Or winner. Definitely justified in winning that, although I would have picked Zone of Interest, but you know, it is what it is. But Anatomy of a Fall deserved that win, I think, too. Honestly, I'm probably gonna say Anatomy of a Fall because technically, May December isn't entirely original because it is based off of real people. So in that sense, it's not entirely original. I mean, it's not based off a book or anything. It's not adapted from anything.
It's adapted from reality.
Yeah, I guess. Based on a true story, that type thing. But that doesn't discount the film, though. That doesn't discount the film. It's still very, very great. But my pick, probably Anatomy of a Fall. I think Justine Triet. The things going on in that film was magnificent. The construction of it all, gorgeous, and just so thrilling. Such a thrilling piece of cinema, in an incredible courtroom drama. But it's more than just that. It's more than a courtroom drama, in all honesty.
I'm with you.
Great film. Great, great film. So yeah, my pick is Anatomy of a Fall. My prediction is an oh man yeah my prediction Anatomy of a Fall.
Good save. Yeah. Beautiful work.
All right, now on to the acting categories.
Acting? Okay.
Or did you want to do director?
Let's do acting.
Okay.
Let's do acting. We'll save your rant for the end.
Supporting, yeah, director at the end. Well, second to last.
Yeah.
Supporting actor.
Actor?
Yeah, supporting actor.
Well, we had 5 nominees.
Yes, we did.
Go figure. We had Sterling K. Brown for his role in American Fiction, Robert De Niro in Killers of the Flower Moon, Robert Downey Jr. in Oppenheimer, Ryan Gosling in Barbie, and Mark Ruffalo in Poor Things.
They were all great.
Agreed.
I think they all deserve a nomination. Although I will say, where's my guy Charles Melton? Like I said, he got snubbed pretty big. I mean, De Niro's a legend. He's won Oscars already, so but even then, he's been recognized by the Academy before, so he doesn't really need to be here. I mean, he does deserve the nomination and the award. I thought he was great, but again, I don't necessarily see him needing to be here. So if I were to replace somebody, it would be him for Charles Melton. But my pick, though, of the 5, probably Robert Downey Jr. That's my pick. I did like his performance a lot in Oppenheimer. I thought he was really good. One of the best parts of that film, honestly. Especially, you know, it was a breath of fresh air to see him in a film other than an MCU movie. So that was nice. And him actually taking his craft seriously. I'm just kidding. I know he took his craft seriously when he was doing those films, but you know what I mean. Taking it in a more, like, respected artistic role. You know what I mean? So.
I suppose I do.
Yeah. Yeah, so my pick and prediction is RDJ, Oppenheimer.
Yeah. Fair. I'd also like to shout out Harris Dickinson and Jeremy Allen White in the Iron Claw.
Yeah.
Strong performances from both of them to support. The year of Jeremy Allen White could have continued with an Oscar nomination. That would have been something. That would have been something. I'm really glad. I want to be upfront and say this. I'm happy that they didn't nominate Jacob Elordi for his role in Priscilla. I was not a fan of that movie, and I was not a fan of his performance in it. Wasn't my thing. But I, again, like Tristan said, this is a really, really strong category. They're all fantastic performances. De Niro, Gosling, Ruffalo, Sterling K. Brown, excellent performances, all of them. Like, I don't think there's a bad performance in here, or even one that I'd consider, like, fine.
Yeah.
They're all really very good. But again, I agree with you. Pick and prediction, RDJ, Oppenheimer.
All right. Best supporting actress. This one's very easy for the both of us.
Yes. Yes, it is.
List them off. Emily Blunt, Oppenheimer, Danielle Brooks, The Color Purple, America Ferrera, Barbie, Jodie Foster, Nyad, and Divine Joy Randolph, The Holdovers. Pick and prediction, Divine Joy Randolph.
Pick and prediction, Divine Joy Randolph.
Yeah.
I don't need to say much more.
Yeah. I don't know why America Ferrera is nominated. Yeah, I don't know why she's there. But that's all I got to say. Oh, wait, actually, no. Where's Julianne Moore from May, December, huh? Where is she, huh? Come on, where's Julianne Moore? I wonder where she be, where she is, because I don't see her name on this list. And she should be. Shame on you, voters. Shame on you for not nominating her. Shame. Shame on you. All right. Best actor.
Ooh. Best actor. We had Bradley Cooper as Leonard Bernstein in Maestro. We had Colman Domingo in Rustin. As the activist, oh god, I don't want to screw up his name.
Rustin.
It's a B. It starts with a B. Bayard Rustin. Thank God. I was gonna say Barnard, and I was gonna be wrong. Bayard Rustin. We had Paul Giamatti in The Holdovers as Paul Hunnam. We had Cillian Murphy in Oppenheimer as J. Robert Oppenheimer, and we had Jeffrey Wright. In American Fiction, for his role, well, everyone called him Monk, but his real name is Thelonious, which I thought was really cool. Ellison. Thelonious Ellison, parentheses Monk.
And for those who may be unaware, the reason why he had Monk as a nickname is because a very famous and legendary jazz artist.
Oh, yeah.
Thelonious Monk. Although I don't know if, like, his character in the book, the reason he had the monk as the nickname, but that's what I assume. Anyways, before I get my pick and prediction, I want to give a rest in peace to a name who is not here. I don't know why he's not nominated, but he certainly was snubbed and deserved to be. My boy Zac Efron. For his role as Kevin Von Erich in The Iron Claw. Dude put on a career best performance. As Kevin Von Erich in The Iron Claw. Was captivating. The dude has showed such an immense range in that film. He was so good.
Yeah.
He was incredible. I didn't know he had it in him, but he did. So props to Zach for his work in Iron Claw. He most definitely deserved to be nominated. And honestly, if he was nominated, I would have picked him to win. He would have been my pick. But since he's not here, unfortunately, my pick, although I did love this performance, is Paul Giamatti in The Holdovers. He was wonderful. I thought his depiction of this like man who, you know, clearly holds on to resentment from his past, and seeing him kind of unravel those deep seated, deep rooted emotions throughout the film was very touching to see. As he bonded with his co-star Dominic Sessa and Divine Joy Randolph. I mean, man, The Holdovers was brilliant. I mean, so good. Incredible. But yeah, he's my pick. My prediction, Cillian Murphy. And also shout out to Jeffrey Wright. You know, he doesn't get much attention from mainstream audiences. I mean, people who know him know his work. He's great in pretty much everything he's been in. Love the guy. Bradley Cooper, honestly, I was looking back at some archival footage of Bernstein himself, or Bernstein. He didn't really give off that kind of energy that Leonard did, that Leonard had. I'm gonna be honest. I thought his performance was good. I didn't think he was like bad or anything.
Yep.
But it certainly displayed, and this was just more of an issue with the film itself. It was just more like, I think the ethos of the film was certainly kind of distorted. I think Cooper was more or less focused on trying to win an award. But again, we'll get to that. So yeah. That's all I got to say for Best Actor.
Yeah, Best Actor. I'm kind of... Coleman Domingo was pretty good in Rustin, though I will again say that the portrayal of real people, I feel as though it kind of diminishes it, and the movie has to be working well. And I didn't think Rustin worked well as a film. Maestro, I thought, worked well, but I would have rather seen Bradley Cooper nominated for directing over his acting. I thought that the directing was better than the acting, and I'm shocked that the acting was recognized by the Academy. It made me stop looking at me like a shark in a pool. But that's my thought. I would have rather seen him nominated for directing than for any than for acting. He feels out of place here. Jeffrey Wright, funny, great performance, really, really solid. It's a shame he's going up against a favorite. My prediction is Cillian Murphy will win. My hope and my prayer is that Paul Giamatti wins. That's my pick. Please, Paul, bring it home.
Bro, watch the voters do a 180 and vote Coleman Domingo. Watch
it. I'll be upset. I will be upset with that, actually. I would have a riot. I also feel as though we should mention Nicolas Cage as a snub. His performance in Dream Scenario. Love it. And I agree with you about Zac Efron. 100% agree.
Also, too, since we mentioned the word riot, I will say if Divine Joy Randolph doesn't win Best Supporting Actress, we will riot.
We will riot. I will cause a commotion on a flight. A commercial one.
All right. Oh, here we go. Now, this is the hardest category for me this year.
That's fair.
Best actress. This one, oh my gosh. This one is... This is probably one of the best lineups that I've ever seen, apart from, I don't know why Annette Bening's here. I don't know why. Again, Natalie Portman for May December, literally probably her best performance in her career. Again, why isn't she nominated? I don't know. Annette Bening, like, love you, but still... What are you doing?
I love you. You didn't know who she was a month and a half ago.
No, I did. I saw her 20th Century Women. I just forgot her name. Oh, that's not important. That's not important. Okay. Oh, anyways, moving on. So we got Annette Bening, Naiad. I don't know why she's there. Lily Gladstone. Killers of the Flower Moon, Sandra Hüller, or Hüller, I don't know. Anatomy of a Fall, Carey Mulligan, Maestro, Emma Stone, Poor Things.
You want me to go first? I can go first.
You go
looking
first.
At me?
You go first.
All right. He's looking at me like all skeptical, like, I don't like that. I'd like to first address Annette Bening in Naiad. Same thing with the portraying real people. Annette Bening, well, not Annette Bening. Diana Nyad is... This feels very, very sport biopic-y. And I don't think it is deserving of a win, let alone her first Academy Award win. Diana Nyad in this film is very unlikable, and I do not like her. If you were to have a list of... Which of the characters portrayed by the Best Actress nominees that you'd like to have a drink with? Dead last. Dead last. I don't want to touch. I don't want to be in the same room as Diana Nyad. Not to mention the fact that the swim that is depicted in the film is not verified by the Guinness Book of World Records, as well as other swimming federations, because they did not verify that it was an independent swim. Especially since she did it at 64 years old. And not that those are reasons to discount the performance, but I'm discounting the performance.
Valid.
Thank you. Cool. Valid, I appreciate valid, it. Appreciate you.
Valid.
I was impressed with Carey Mulligan in Maestro. I thought she was one of the bright spots in that film.
Oh, yeah. She acted circles around Bradley.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would have to agree.
Yeah, she definitely deserves to be here.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
Emma Stone bringing to life Bella Baxter, impressive. Skill, dang, nice work. She's not going to win, though. So it's a real shame. It's real shame. Ooh, boy, real shame. I mean, we've got probably one of the most complex female characters to exist on screen in the last few years, and that's Sandra Voiner from Anatomy of a Fall, portrayed by Sandra Hüller. That's my pick for Best Actress, because how could it not be? I mean, how could it not be? But my prediction is that the Academy will go with Lily Gladstone for Killers of the Flower Moon. I think the Academy is going in that direction. I think they'll take Lily, and it'll be a deserved victory.
Yeah. Man, this is hard for me, because three Titan performances, like career-defining performances, honestly, from Lily Gladstone, Sandra Hüller, and Emma Stone. And, you know, maybe to an extent Carey Mulligan, but I more so with the three that I mentioned. Oh, man. My prediction is Lily Gladstone. That's my prediction. My pick. Oh, my gosh. It's so hard. God, it's so hard. Because all three of those women, dude, absolutely killed it in their roles. Gosh, it's so hard. I'm going to say... I'm going to say Lily as my pick. I mean, when I first saw Killers of the Flower Moon, I was just gobsmacked.
Good word.
By her performance. I mean, Sandra Hüller too. Oh my goodness. It's so hard. Look, if they all three could win simultaneously, I would say that. But since I can only pick one winner, yeah, I'd go with Lily. Lily Gladstone.
And it's hard for me to spotlight a snub in this year because there's so many good performances up there.
Oh my gosh, you know what else I forgot?
What's that?
You know what else I forgot? Kaylee Spaney as Priscilla Presley in Priscilla. I can't believe I forgot that. No, she was great. No, I don't care what you say. I don't care. She was incredible. And obviously, I mentioned Natalie Portman. You know, her as well. I know you shook your head. I mean, that's fair. I said Kaylee Spaney. You're like, no.
I did. I would mention Margot Robbie. A lot of people have talked about it. I mean, I would get behind it if she was nominated. But, I mean, if given the list that we have, I mean, it's a fantastic list. I would throw a shout out to Margaret Qualley in Sanctuary as well. I think that she brings levels, brings so much dynamic unpredictability to this dominatrix character that's fantastic. And we kind of never know what she's about to do. And I love it. And I think that if she was nominated and people watched that movie, I think we would all agree.
Mm. All right, down to the final two. Final two. Best director. Dun, dun, dun.
Sure. And the nominee.
This one's extremely easy for me. Very easy for me. So we got Anatomy of a Fall, Justine Triet. Killers of the Flower Moon, Martin Scorsese, Oppenheimer, Christopher Nolan, Poor Things, Yorgos Lanthimos, and The Zone of Interest, Jonathan Glazer. My pick is The Zone of Interest from Jonathan Glazer. Obviously, my more expansive thoughts are in the episode before this, so go listen there. But all I have to say is he crafted one of the greatest pieces of modern cinema. Go watch it if you haven't. It is timeless. It is a masterpiece. It is incredible. And prediction.
I've been waiting for this.
I hate this, dude. I hate this because it's going to go to Christopher Nolan. That makes me so sad because it's the worst film here. It's the worst film on this five of this five. Oh my God. It's the worst. Of the five. I mean, it's not like a terrible movie. It's not terrible, don't get me wrong. But it's not that good. Like, honestly, it's a rebound from Tenet, which was trash. Tenet was indiscernible. Confusing as hell. Literally, like, what am I watching? And why is Travis... Why am I listening to a Travis Scott song on a Christopher Nolan movie, okay? And why is the main character called protagonist? Anyways, yeah, Tenet was garbage. Oppenheimer was a good rebound. Not his best film, though. That still belongs to Memento. But unfortunately, what we have fallen into is the tried and true age-old trap of pity picks. The Grammys are very notorious for this, and I don't know that much about Oscar history, but I'm assuming they are too. Given that Nolan, for one, hasn't won anything prior to this, let's hope it stays that way after Sunday.
Damn.
And, you know, there's been films that he's made prior to this that have absolutely deserved to be nominated and to win. I think Inception was one of those films. Memento was one of those films. Prestige was one of those films. And I think that's it. Yeah, but Oppenheimer, it's not the masterpiece that people claim it is. It's not that good. It's like I'm watching a 3-hour trailer. His decisions in kind of including this constant score over the dialogue, which also is one of his weakest traits, is his screenwriting. That's one of his weakest traits as a filmmaker, is his writing. So the fact that this is a nearly 3.5-hour film of people talking, it doesn't play that well, in my opinion. The best sequence of the film is, and it plays to Nolan's strengths as, you know, this grand scope that he loves to do and play with, that idea, and like time as well, you know. But the scene of the Trinity test, I thought that was brilliantly directed. That was the best sequence of the film. But I mean, everything outside of that, honestly, was kind of like lackluster, in my opinion. So, yeah. Unfortunately, I think the voters will go with Oppenheimer, which will make me very, very sad, because there are 4 directors on here that deserve that award. I will say a couple of snubs. Again, Todd Haynes snubbed. Greta Gerwig was snubbed. I will also mention Sofia Coppola was snubbed. I know you disagree, but
a little bit.
But yeah. I mean, oh my gosh, I'm gonna be very sad. I'm expecting it to happen, so I'm just gonna prepare for that to win.
Yeah.
Why?
I've got kind of, by the way, we're going to be releasing another video on our Instagram, odyssey.of.cinema, of some of our reactions, our more entertaining ones, for some of the awards that are won over the evening. Please stay tuned to watch Tristan's tears fall down his face as Christopher Nolan wins the Academy Award for Best Directing. I agree with the Greta Gerwig snub. I also would like to throw Wes Anderson in the ring here, directing. I mean, even, you know, I should have mentioned it way back with production design, too. The fact that the scenery still keeps that symmetrical thing, that symmetrical aesthetic for him, but it's also looking flat, like it is a two-dimensional thing because it is put up on a stage and it's a stage production. I loved that. It was beautiful. I think that Wes Anderson needed a nomination here for direction. I mean, Lanthimos, sure. Scorsese, I would have replaced him, if I'm honest, with any of those that I've mentioned. Trier, I'm glad she's here. It's fantastic. I love it. I love me Anatomy of a Fall. I think my pick will be Zone of Interest, but my prediction will be the same as Tristan. It'll be Christopher Nolan for Oppenheimer.
Also, shout out to Miyazaki for The Boy and the Heron and Sean Durkin for The Iron Claw.
Agreed.
Yeah. And, you know, might as well, as I'm at it, John Boyce for The History of the Minnesota Vikings.
Solid. Heck yeah.
Yeah.
Final All award right. of the night?
The final award, the most important one, best picture. Oh boy. Oh boy, oh boy, oh boy. Oh boy. Now this one I'm going to riot because there's 10 options. I'm going to say three. Yeah, let's say three of them. I would be very upset if they won. Well, two of them I would be very upset if they won. The other one, not so much, but I would be confused. But I highly doubt it will win. But let's just list them off. We got American Fiction, Anatomy of a Fall, Barbie, The Holdovers, Killers of the Flower Moon, Maestro, Oppenheimer, Past Lives, Poor Things, and last but certainly not least, The Zone of Interest. My pick is The Zone of Interest. You want to give me your pick?
My pick is Anatomy of a Fall.
Okay. Okay. Now here was the fun part. Okay, Maestro is the worst film on this list by, you know, a considerable amount, in my opinion. Complete Oscar bait. I think Bradley Cooper's approach to this film and to dissecting Bernstein as a person completely and utterly failed. I did not understand or even learn anything about Bernstein, what his impact was on music and conducting. All I kind of came away with after watching that was he struggled with his sexuality and being truthful about that, but
exactly.
And like he was, you know, not faithful to his wife, and that was it. That was kind of all I got from the movie, and I wanted to see a deeper dive into his approach to music, his craft. You know, I think if I recall from Tar, he was the only conductor to do Mahler's Five.
All nine of them? I think that's accurate. Mahler, I think that's
Mahler's
correct.
Five, the Mahler's Five? Mahler's Fifth Circle or whatever they called it? Fifth Cycle?
All nine symphonies of Mahler.
Oh, yes, nine. My bad.
And she was working on the Fifth Symphony. Yeah.
Okay. My bad. Yeah, he was the only conductor to do that, if I recall. And, you know, that would have been cool to, like, kind of see that, you know? Obviously, the film itself looked very beautiful. I mean, there were some gorgeous shots. My favorite being the one, him as the shadow, conducting, and Carey Mulligan's character was in, like, the center of the shadow. Mm-hmm. That was a great shot. Favorite shot of the film. But like, again, Bradley Cooper tried way too hard fishing for awards. I don't think he's gonna get any. So he needs to return to the drawing board and make a film with proper heart, and not try to make a film solely for the acclaim of award season, because let's be honest, it's the Oscars, and as much as I care about it at the time, the next day I don't care. So,
fair. I mean,
you know,
yeah, Maestro. Yeah. Maestro, it again, it's not very high on my ranking of Best Picture nominees. I think it's at its highest, it might be 8 out of 10. But just because it's not a straight biopic, which makes me very happy about that. But again, I'd rather see his direction than his acting, and I there are some truly great shots and sequences, but I don't think it's enough to make it win Best Picture.
So I would be very upset if that wins, and then I'd also be very upset if Oppenheimer wins, because although it is not my second to worst or second to last, it is American Fiction, but I enjoyed watching American Fiction more than I enjoyed watching Oppenheimer, although I did think Oppenheimer was a better film. Yes.
Yeah, I agree with that 100%. That take, I agree.
Yeah. But like I said, kind of with Christopher Nolan's directing, kind of same comments here.
Yeah.
No. So, and it probably will win, and I will, you know, just grab a hammer and smash my TV. Just kidding. No, I'm kidding. Yeah, it'll be like last year when I was just in denial the whole time. Like, oh yeah, Tar will win everything. And I was completely wrong. And freaking Everything Everywhere All at Once won everything. And I was very, very mad. Very mad.
Yeah. You and I were in the boat last year of we had a one film that we wanted to win everything. Except I was realistic and knew mine wouldn't.
Yeah,
and you thought you had a shot.
I genuinely did. I genuinely did. Because I don't know. I mean, the Daniels.
Yeah.
The Daniels aren't as like established. So, you know, Christopher Nolan is an established name in the industry. So obviously I'm coming in with the fact that like, okay, he has clout. He has respect.
Mm-hmm.
He has a filmography that is well respected. And he hasn't gotten recognition from the Academy yet. So, you know, this is like the film where this is probably his year to kind of sweep, which makes me very sad because honestly, like, there's just better films out there, guys. There's better films out there. There is.
Is that your prediction, though? Do you think they'll predict?
Yeah, my prediction's Oppenheimer. Yeah, that's my prediction.
I don't know here. Because I think there's a lot of ways the Academy can go. I don't think they're going with American Fiction. I don't think they're going with Maestro. Not. I don't think they're going with Past Lives that we haven't talked about a lot, but we did a whole episode on last week. It's a great movie. I just don't think it'll get that recognition with an actual trophy award season. There's also why am I blanking? Killers of the Flower Moon, I think, is an accomplishment. I don't think it's going to win Best Picture, nor do I think it should. There's Poor Things. My thoughts on Poor Things are, I mean, it creates a beautiful world. The design, the world building, everything that goes into it is stunning. The creation of that other place, that other society, is fantastic. And then the story falls flat to me. I mean, it seems to me to be about, I think there's far too much of an emphasis on her sexuality. I think there's far too much of an emphasis on that being the driving force for Bella's character development and for her learning about the world. I think that there's far too much emphasis on that. I don't think that there's as much agency in it as there should be. I think it misses, and that, I mean, that's just me, but I am not as high on Poor Things as pretty much everybody else is. So, ta-da. That's my Poor Things thought of the day. The holdovers, I mean, we're in the spot. Like, Barbie
it works. Like, it does what it needs to do. Yeah, Barbie, I think, pulls off more of that energy. I think Barbie does what Poor Things wanted to do a little bit better. Noted they're different films and they're tackling different ideas, but I do think that Barbie gets its message across a little bit clearer and isn't as distracting, I think, with its message. Unless, of course, you come away with a completely off thing, like I'm Just Ken being,
I'm you know. Enough.
Yeah, the
Mojo Dojo Casa House.
I am Kenuff, I promise. But Barbie has a shot, I think, if the voters end up going down that trip of wanting to recognize the film, which I think they could. The holdovers,
I
love.
Shock. I would be shocked if Barbie wins. I'm honestly expecting Oppenheimer, genuinely.
I'd be surprised. I wouldn't be devastated. The holdovers, yeah. I'd be shocked. I'd be so happy, but I'd be shocked because I think that a lot of people are going to revisit the holdovers year after year. I think that that's a movie that I'm going to be revisiting year after year as sort of like a holiday kind of classic.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I love it, but I don't think it'll win. And then all that's left for me on that list is Oppenheimer and The Zone of Interest. And like I said, it really depends on if the Academy watched The Zone of Interest. If Zone of Interest picks up Best Sound early on in the ceremony, it's got a real shot at Best Picture.
You think?
I do think.
If The Zone of Interest wins,
that'll be shocking.
Oh my god, I'm gonna be on the moon, bro. I'm gonna be on Mars, dog. I'm gonna be, dude. If that wins Best Picture,
yeah.
Oh my gosh, let's just hope the cameras are rolling.
Yeah. I mean, my hope is that the appearance of Messi at the nominees dinner, the dog in Anatomy of a Fall, I hope that that sways enough voters to vote for Anatomy of a Fall for Best Picture, and so that way the Academy gets it to win.
Okay.
That's the dream.
Okay, I like
that. That's the dream.
I like that.
But I think they're going to go with Oppenheimer as well.
I like that.
I'm prepared for that kind of disappointment. Like, it's a solid, I think it's a solid film. I think it would win Best Picture in another year. I think in other years there aren't as many deserving candidates to win. This year there's a lot of deserving candidates. And so it's just like, because it's been winning, it probably will continue. Tragedy.
All right.
But that's okay.
So, sorry. Sorry, you weren't finished.
No, I was finished. And that's okay.
It's just, you know, just a couple of snubs. Just a few, you know, short list. You know, May December, The Iron Claw, The Boy and the Heron, Priscilla. You're like, what? What's Priscilla doing there?
What the hell is Priscilla making it on this list for?
You know, I honestly, like, you know, Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse, I think that deserves a Best Picture nom. And then the number of foreign films that I listed too. But, yes. You know, obviously it's the Oscars, so it's going to be dominated by English-speaking films. American films, so that's just kind of the MO. If Anatomy of a Fall wins, dude, I'd be pretty happy too. I'd be very happy too.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, if that wins, that's crazy. That's like, that would be one of the craziest like Oscar. I mean, it's not like a sport or anything, but I guess if we were to compare it to a sport, it would be like if the 16 seed beat a 1 seed in March Madness. It's like, I mean, okay, maybe not 16 seed because it didn't win Palme d'Or. And so yeah, there is some overlap there, but not a lot.
No. I mean, what happened with Triangle of Sadness
last year? When the last time, because last year, was the Palme d'Or winner? Yeah, it was nominated.
It was Triangle.
Yeah, Triangle of Sadness. Then the year before that, I honestly don't remember.
I think it was Titania.
Oh, yeah, Titan.
Or Titan, yeah, that's the one.
That didn't get nominated.
It did not.
No. But I think the last time it actually happened was Parasite, winner of Palme d'Or and Best Picture. But Anatomy of a Fall did not capture American audiences the same way Parasite did. So I think, and also too, like, the voters got to watch these movies as well. And obviously the films that were watched the most was Oppenheimer and Barbie.
Barbenheimer.
And Poor Things. And Killers of the Flower Moon, I would guess. Because it's a Scorsese film, so. Yeah, but if the Messi stump worked, well, one of the greatest underdog stories in Oscar history. We're holding out hope.
Oh, I'm so excited. I'm preparing to have my heart broken. Though,
imagine. You know what's funny? I remember I sent you that picture of like some studio heads were mad that Trier brought the dog to the luncheon or whatever.
Yep.
It's like, what are you doing? That's illegal. That's a cheat. That's a cheat. You're cheating. You can't bring dog on to luncheon to steal votes.
Fine. Bro, I mean, let's
bro, cry. I don't care.
let's even the playing field, all right? Let's even the playing field. They had Jeffrey Wright bring in a copy of his book, Fuck. They had Cillian Murphy bring the test prop of the Trinity bomb.
Really?
No.
Oh.
No.
It's like, what? Really?
They had Mark Ruffalo put on that mustache again. Why? They had Paul Giamatti bring in his glass eye and make Cherry's Jubilee at each table around the luncheon. I mean, come on, you gotta level the playing field, you know?
Mm.
Past lives, they actually put a Korean person at each, a Korean couple at each table to sit next to a white guy and talk to each other while falling deeply in love and just making him a little bit uncomfortable. Please laugh at that.
You say it again? Sorry. You say it again? I wasn't paying attention. Sorry. You say that again? Guys. I wasn't paying attention. You say it again, please?
I said we're going to make a laugh. They're going to put a Korean couple at each table to sit next to a white guy while speaking only in Korean and falling deeper in love, making him really uncomfortable.
Yes.
And then they'll have a conductor figurine on each table.
Yeah.
You know, for the maestro.
Wanna be tar. Sorry, Bradley. You cannot, I don't think you'll ever match the cinematic excellence of Todd Field and Cate Blanchett.
Yeah.
Sorry, bro.
But we're gonna wrap this up now. Our Oscar picks and predictions for every award. I will have our video of our reactions out after the Academy. The Academy Awards start at 7 p.m. on Sunday, the 10th, which is tomorrow as we're releasing this. So make sure to tune in. It's on ABC. And just, you know, maybe you can tune in there, or you can just wait with bated breath to see what our faces look like when they face inevitable defeat or unpredictable victory. But, you know, this has been the Cinematic Odyssey Oscars edition. Yes. Special edition. Yes. Back with a regular episode next week, probably.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, thank you for listening.
Thank you. Thank you, everybody. Well, I guess I'll stop this
long. Yeah, I was waiting for you to take over there.
Yeah. Yeah, thanks everybody who has gotten this far. Thank you for listening. Yeah, tune into the Oscars. It'll be a fun time. And hopefully, you know, all my picks are the winners, but I know that's not going to happen. So I'm not even going to, like, be in denial. But anyways, we'll catch you guys next week. Have a good weekend. Have fun watching the Oscars. This has been the Cinematic Odyssey here on U92 The Moose. Forever.